All right, ladies and gentlemen, Greg Kokel, stand to reason.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, all of you. And glad you joined me today. I need your help today. I want you to call in on an issue. Give me some counsel, and I'll set that up in just a moment. Just so you know, though, if you're a newcomer, this is, of course, the marketplace of ideas where issues of philosophy and religion are discussed in the public forum of talk radio. And you can call this number. I'll give you in a moment if you want to ask a question about the Bible or sharing your faith or respond to the issue that I'm going to bring up here in just a moment. Basic rule here is give me a piece of your mind, and I'll do my best to give you a piece of mine. Those numbers, 1-800-227-5278. If you're in the 714 area code, 754-4150 is the local number here. And before you ring me up, though, I want you to be thinking about this question. This is something, excuse me, that I've been confronted with earlier this week, and it's in the broad category of what the heck next? You know, as if our hands are not full enough with things to do, with ideas to deal with and address, and gospel to defend, and all of those other things. It's like, and I've made this comment before, our job is getting harder and harder. When I say our, I don't mean mine as a professional. I mean ours, yours and mine, as Christians who care about the truth and have to navigate in our culture, have to navigate in our culture to communicate that truth clearly. And that's the job of the church. We have been entrusted with this message because there are all kinds of contrary messages out there, contrary secular messages and contrary, in a sense, quasi-Christian messages. Jesus warned in Matthew 24 that false messiahs and false prophets would abound. All right? Notice he said false messiahs and false prophets. He didn't say false religious views or philosophies or ideologies. I mean, certainly those are abounding too, and Paul talks about that in 2 Corinthians, or make that 2 Timothy chapter 2. But Jesus was specifically talking about, I think, those things that would be close competitors, that would offer messiahs, that would offer prophets. And sometimes those false messiahs and false prophets strike so close to home that the organizations that present them pass for Christianity. And so part of our job is to say, wait, not so quick. Well, there is a Christianity, there is a historical Christianity, and it has a certain set of doctrines, and now people coming up here in the 18th and 19th century with new ideas about this are theologically out in the margin. We've got to warn against that, which we've done. These are classically called cults of Christianity. But more and more, the struggle is inside our own ranks. People that just don't seem to get it. They don't understand the nature of the struggle. They don't have their eyes open. And I use these verses frequently in my conversations with groups, and I've said it here a number of times. Mark them. Colossians 2, verses 8 and 9. And 2 Corinthians 10, verses 3 and 4. Colossians 2, 8 and 9. Do not be taken captive by philosophies and empty deception according to the traditions of men, instead of according to Christ. Paul says, be on your guard. Don't let anybody suck you in. In order to be on your guard, you're going to have to know a little bit about what those things are, recognize them for what they are, and resist them. But we have to go beyond the defensive posture, and that's the second verse, 2 Corinthians 10, 3 and 4, or thereabouts. I might be off a verse or two. We have weapons that of our warfare that are divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses. What are those? Paul makes it clear. We are casting down speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God. So part of our spiritual warfare entails taking false ideas, speculations or theories, false ideas and speculations raised up against the knowledge of God, false notions of God and truth regarding to spiritual matters, not only resisting them, being on our guard against them, being prepared so we are not taken in by them, but actually going after those things. And Paul's life is a great example of that. He understood the ideas of the day, and he stood against those ideas. And he did so verbally. And sometimes he did so more tenderly, and sometimes more aggressively as the circumstances required, but he understood. And that's what being a light on the hill entails of church. Being aware of the problems, being protected, that we're not sucked in, and we are quickly willing to point that out to others. So, with that as a foundation, given that's our charge, I mentioned as I started, it's getting more and more difficult to do that. Frankly, because fewer and fewer Christians are capable of understanding the ideas, and I shouldn't say aren't capable, they are capable, are able to understand. They're capable to understand, but they are not able to understand because they haven't taken these things seriously, they haven't been educated, they've been distracted, their churches aren't focusing on the right things. I don't know, but they're missing it. So now, with that in mind, so not able to because of the lack of proper education, not only are they not able to tear down these speculations, they aren't even able to defend themselves against it. And in circumstances like that, it's easy for people to get confused. Now, with that as a preamble, let me ask you a question. And here's the question I would love to hear you weigh in on. 1-800-227-5278. If you were one of the largest churches in Southern California, if you had 10,000 people coming to your church every single week, in one form or another, Sundays, Wednesdays, midweek enterprises, 10,000, that's megachurch stuff. If, in terms of your values, you are on record as saying we want to honor God in all we do, teach God's word, be God's family, have every believer as a minister with a ministry, and be innovative in our ministry and relevant in our community, those are your values. And in terms of what you believe, according to the Bible, God's word, those who believe that Jesus is the Son of God and by grace trust him as their Lord and Savior to forgive their sins are members of the worldwide body of Christ. This is foundational. This is essential. I mean, that's one of us, right? If you are this church and the organization of the Church of Jesus Christ for Latter-day Saints, LDS, Mormons, knocks on your door, and they say, down the road, we've just built a big temple, and we have an open house for 3 weeks. In those 3 weeks, 185,000 people will be visiting our new temple, in which, of course, we will showcase our religion. Can we borrow your church parking lot because ours isn't big enough so that Monday through Friday we can fill your parking lot with seekers? Not seekers for your church, seekers for ours. Seekers for the Mormon church. And we will arrange for shuttling them back and forth to the new Mormon temple here in Southern California. If we can just use your property. Now, my question to you is, 1-800-227-5278, what would you say? You are a huge church committed to the gospel of Jesus Christ, entrusted by God with reaching your community, in this case, broadly speaking, Irvine, because that's where the new temple is going up. In fact, it is up. Open house started yesterday. And you have been entrusted by Christ with reaching that community. What do you say to the Mormon folk down the road when they come and ask if they can use your facility to promote their religion? What do you say? And why do you say what you do? That's what I want to know. Now, I'll tell you what this church said. Let me take a couple deep breaths. Count to 10. This church said yes. Be my guest. Come on down. Now, why would they say that? Because we want to be neighborly. Because, I'm quoting, by the way, this is what they said. Because we want to be a light on the hill. because we want to be neighborly, we will help the Mormons promote their false religion. Because we want to be a light on the hill to the truth of Jesus Christ, we are going to help the Mormons promote their false religion. Will somebody please make sense out of this for me? Somebody please explain it to me. I've got a raft of emails here in front of me. Costanza Reason has been involved with this church communicating, or at least with some of those that have been involved. They've been receiving emails, I know, from other people who are concerned about this. Some of our staff have gone to other churches in the area asking for those churches to please weigh in, leadership to leadership, and say something. And the response was, let me see if I got this right. We don't want to show disunity. We don't want to criticize our brothers in public. Oh, by the way, there's another leg to this. Since this was happening, of course, the news got out, and those who are involved in ministry to Mormons, Christians ministering to Mormon, notice the distinction I'm making between the two words, because Mormons are not Christians. They are Mormons. They have entirely different doctrines than Christians have. Well, let's put it this way. If Mormons are Christians, then Christians aren't Christians. I don't know what we are, but we're not Christians, because Mormons and Christianity are totally different. I'll speak to this in just a moment. The organizations of Christians who have a heart for the LDS and they are involved in missionary work to them, written literature, knocking on their doors, going to their events, talking to their people, trying to show the distinctions between the LDS and biblical Christianity, they approached this church and asked if they can at least hand out tracts so that people climbing on the buses on their way over to be exposed to 1 to 3 hours of very slick, very clever, very well-funded and sophisticated LDS propaganda. Now, I'm using this term in not the pejorative sense, but in the sense that I often describe our stuff when I hand it out at events, Standard Reason propaganda. This is to explain about our organization and encourage you to be a part of it. When they were, these are, in other words, people are going to be getting off the buses, getting onto buses in this church's parking lot, going to the temple to be exposed to that. And that's why these are very successful ways, this is a very effective way for the LDS to pick up new members. Because they got a captive audience, they got a great new building, they got nice people with big smiles on their face, and they got a very fancy, clever, powerful presentation. Plus, they get the names and addresses, just like I would, so they can follow up. It's an evangelism machine. That's what's going on. So these Mormon missionaries, I mean Christians who are missionaries to Mormons, wanted to register a warning in their literature to those getting on the buses to go over to be evangelized by the Mormons that Mormonism and Christianity aren't the same thing. They're two different things. And in a gracious way, in a kind way, as they're capable of, offer literature so people can at least be in a position to compare. And they were forbidden to come onto the property. Let me see if I get this right now. The Mormons can use the property of this megachurch in Southern California as a staging base for promoting their false religion, but those who are Christians committed to the gospel of Jesus Christ, clarifying the false philosophies of the age, the philosophies according to the tradition of men instead of according to Christ, Colossians 2, verse 8, that we are to be protecting ourselves from, these missionaries that are committed to tearing down speculations, in this case, Mormon speculations and lofty things raised up against the knowledge of the true God, which their doctrine amounts to. These people carrying out those dual commands are forbidden on the property. And other churches in the area that have been asked to weigh in on this have encouraged other Christians to lay low, don't cause a fuss, because we don't want to make it look like disunity. So the bad guys now are the missionaries to the Mormons. Now, just in case you're a little confused on this, in terms of Mormon doctrine, because I know there has been a tremendous effort to, what's the right word? I almost said sanitize, but I think that would be the wrong word. That would be uncharitable. I was going to say sanitize Mormonism so it made it look more like Christianity, but that makes it look like it's a little sullied, and, you know, usually people with bad reputations sanitize theirs, and I don't mean to say that. I'm saying that this is something other than Christianity. It is clearly something other than Christianity. Back in 19th century, when all this started, Joseph Smith sought after God's help to know what was the right religion to follow in this community in Palmyra, New York, who had dozens of Christian churches, which denomination he should go to. God allegedly told Joseph Smith that they were all abominations. In other words, those churches that believe what you and I believe, if you are a biblical Christian, God told Joseph Smith those were abominations. And so he started the Church of Jesus Christ for Latter-day Saints to restore what had been lost and restore true Christianity. So we are not real Christians, and they are. And then he restored the doctrines. In just a moment, I'll tell you what some of those doctrines are, in case you're confused. And it just very well might be that this big, massive church in Southern California with 10,000 members is confused. Maybe they think Mormonism is just another denomination. And if they do, well, shame on them. Absolute shame on them. And if they do know what they stand for and are facilitating evangelism to the Mormon church in the way they're doing, so they can be neighborly and they can be a light on a hill, shame on them double. Given what the church stands for, given for what the church does, Mormon church I'm talking about, it is shameful that they would, for the reasons they gave, support the enterprise of an organization that is an enemy to the cross of Christ. Think I'm wrong? I want to hear about it. But I'm next to speechless. I have more to say about this when we come back. I'm going to bring Standard Reason staff member Brett Kunkel on board, who has just spent a couple of weeks or a week and a half down out in Utah with a group of high school students, and he knows a lot more about the LDS than I do. And I want to make sure I get my facts straight. But I'm going to weigh in and just tell you what they believe. And you think you can draw your own conclusions about whether you think it's a good idea to support this kind of thing. Greg Kokel, Stand to Reason. More in just a moment. Stay with us.
Human suffering poses the most difficult question anyone can ask about a God who is both good and powerful. Do you know how to respond to the presence of evil and suffering in the world? Are you struggling with this question personally and need some clear thinking on the issue? Are you doubting God's goodness, or know someone that is? Let Greg help you think through this important question. Order the tape set, Three Tough Questions, from Stand to Reason. You'll also get Greg's training on two other questions that many struggle with today, the heathen and the unknown God, and Is One Way the Only Way? You'll be equipped to answer three of the toughest questions leveled against Christianity by the time you've thoroughly gone through this material. Extensive notes are included for your study. Order today by calling 1-800-2-REASON or by visiting our website at www.str.org.
Hi, this is Hugh Hewitt. Want to make a difference for a Christianity worth thinking about? Stand to Reason can help you do just that. STR trains Christians just like you to be effective ambassadors for Jesus Christ. Stand to Reason relies on the support of listeners to continue broadcasting in your area and on the web. Your gift keeps STR providing training to you and other Christians to become effective ambassadors for Jesus Christ. You will learn how to deliver a message that is accurately informed, develop a method that is skillful, tactical, and fair, and cultivate a manner that is warm, attractive, and inviting. If you want to make a difference for Christianity worth thinking about today, both in the world and in the church, consider supporting STR Radio today. You can start supporting STR today by calling 1-800-2-REASON or send your gift to 1438 East 33rd Street, Signal Hill, California, 90755. Again, 1438 East 33rd Street, Signal Hill, California, 90755. And thank you for listening.
Greg Kokel, Stand to Reason. Glad you joined us. Incidentally, coming up on next Saturday, July 30th, I'll be at St. John's Prez in West L.A. talking about taking Jesus seriously and the church in the 21st century. That's two different talks because it's a Saturday afternoon. I'll be there actually Saturday morning, 9 in the morning until about noon. There's an interesting story about this church, but I won't tell it here. I'll have to tell it there because I have some very personal connections with the church, and I'll explain why they go back 32 years, or at least from some people at the church. In any event, St. John's Prez in West L.A., Saturday, July 30th, 9 in the morning. Here's the contact number in the 310 area code, 477-2513, if you want details on how to get there. Also, the next day, the 31st on Sunday, I'll be out in Thousand Oaks area, in fact, at Living Oaks Community Church in Newberry Park. That's like Westlake, Thousand Oaks, Newberry Park, all right, if you're heading west. And on the 110, both services, 8:45 and 10:30, and I will be teaching on No Pixie Dust. So if you want to contact there, it's 805 area code, 230-0055 for Living Oaks Community Church in Newberry Park that next Sunday on the 31st, 8:45 and 10:30. Hope to see you there. Wow. I kind of got rolling here this afternoon on a question that I'm asking you. And the question has to do with what you would do if you were a church of 10,000 people in Southern California, and you, had a commitment to spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ, and you were an evangelical church sharing the kinds of beliefs that we share. This isn't Worldwide Church of God. I'm sorry, this is the World Council of Churches. Sorry about that. Worldwide Church of God is on our side now. This isn't the World Council of Churches. It isn't the United Methodist Church, the United Church of Christ. It isn't the Episcopal Church in the more extreme version. These are our guys. And they are asked by the local Mormon temple, brand new now, if they can borrow their parking lot to shuttle Monday through Friday, people back and forth to their temple over the next 3 weeks, in which they expect to have 185,000 people visit, to which they can proselytize aggressively and in a sophisticated way, for their faith. What would you do? Would you say yes or no? This church said yes out of their conviction that this would be neighborly and that this would they wanted to be a light on the hill. I don't know how those go together. Well, certainly that's neighborly. No question there. I don't know how they're a light on the hill. And part of the idea was, and this is also in part of some of the emails that the church has communicated, they just want to be nice and friendly and neighborly. And they also think that some people that are coming by, parking their car there, may end up going to their church. Which I think is dreaming, frankly. They park their car in a lot, climb onto the bus, and they go over to the LDS temple. Or you think they're going to sit there and say, you know, these people are really nice for letting us park in our lot. Let's go to their church someday. Do you think that's going to happen? I think that's wishful thinking. In any event, I have Brett Kunkel with me here, Stand to Reason Student Impact staffer, speaker. And, Brett, you just said at this temple, and you've been following this for a while, and you just came back from Utah yourself with a group of young people doing evangelism to LDS. You said this isn't in Irvine.
It's actually known as the Newport Beach Temple.
Okay. And have you seen this temple?
I have not seen it yet, but I plan to go by.
Okay. I'm going to just run down just a little bit with, and I understand that they 20 to 30%. The Mormon community with a new temple can grow 20 to 30% in a few years because of something like this. So we're talking about a major push.
That's right.
Okay, well, I'm just going to run down some Mormon doctrine stuff, and you correct me if I've got it wrong. Okay, doctrine of God. Okay, Mormons got all the same language, but they got all different definitions. So God is a being that is not immutable, but grows and develops. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. God was actually once a man, just like you and I.
Okay. Now we're talking about Mormon doctrine. We're not talking about necessarily what all Mormons believe, but here's the faith that's being represented out of this. And God has children.
Yes, literally, he has children.
So he has spirit children, and among those spirit children are you and I.
That's right.
And
Jesus.
Jesus
would be his literal son.
And
Lucifer.
And Lucifer. Okay, so according to Mormon doctrine, Jesus is the Son of God in their unique sense, not in the classical sense, but so is Lucifer the Son of God in the same sense, and you and I are sons of God in the same sense. So in terms of the kinds of creatures we are, there is no difference between you and I and Jesus. Is that right? In terms of the nature, the kind of creatures we are?
That's correct.
Okay. And there's no difference between Jesus and Lucifer in the kinds of creatures they are?
That's right.
Okay. Salvation. Salvation by grace through faith entirely, or what?
According to the Mormons, we are saved by grace after all that we can do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's out of, I believe it's 2 Nephi.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a little difference between some Mormons. They'll say, yes, we're saved by grace, but when you push further and you really unpack the doctrine, and when you look at the official doctrine of the church and the official teaching of the prophets and the presidents, it becomes clear that works are necessary. Mm-hmm. Grace is not sufficient. Works are indeed necessary for salvation.
Okay, so they have a different view of salvation. They have a different view of Jesus. They have a different view of you and I, the pre-existence, not that that's so critical. In other words, we existed before we were born, before we were conceived, but that we also can become like God who is in the process of developing.
That's right, through
eternal progression.
Eternal progression. Okay. Exaltation is the goal of every good Mormon.
So this is a different religion.
Yeah, I think it'd be safe to say that, Rick.
Everything's different about this. In fact, when I read in 2 Corinthians, and I talk about Paul says that you put up with a different Jesus and a different spirit, and you have a different prophet, and you have different apostles, and all these other phonies that Paul is warning against. It's almost as if that passage, and I don't know if you can recall exactly where it is, but it's being written specifically to address this problem in which all of those things apply. Now, I'm not here to get down on LDS. That's not my point. I'm here to get down on some other Christians who don't seem to know the difference between truth and error in this regard. And who are now in complicity with this enterprise. What is your, you know, from where you're sitting right now, Brett, because you've been carrying on here, you've sent some emails. What is your take on this?
Well, I think my take is the same as your take on this. I'm shocked, particularly when I first heard about a church allowing the LDS church to open up their parking lot for the temple opening. My immediate assumption was that okay, they've got a plan. They've got a plan in place to reach out to those who are going to be there.
Right.
And then later, I found out that a particular ministry to Mormons that wanted to hand out literature to those who were going to use their parking lot because there wasn't there didn't seem to be a plan in place.
No plan from the home church.
From the home church.
Right.
A ministry to Mormons wants to hand out literature and do it in a gracious way, explicitly saying that they want to do this in a gentle, gracious way and engage graciously, and are not allowed to do that. Like you, I'm speechless.
Mm-hmm.
Speechless.
Mm-hmm. I just wonder if there was if this was a an abortion clinic that wanted to borrow the parking lot, or if it was an adult bookstore who wanted to borrow same circumstances, just let's just change the host. A big homosexual gathering. Part of the concern about thinking of counterexamples that might be clear, a Scientology center. And if they wouldn't use their lot for that purpose, then why not? And why is that any different than the LDS? Do they think that an adult bookstore for example, to use an extreme example, is any less, I should say, any more poisonous? I think it's less, frankly. But I suspect they wouldn't do that. I'm thinking the best right now and charitably. But
yeah, and let's be clear. I wouldn't be against a church letting, you know, the Mormons use their parking lot, but it's the absence of any kind of outreach or even, okay, they didn't have a plan for outreach, but then another ministry does that wants to step in and partner with them.
Who's capable of doing it.
Right, and they'll accommodate the Mormons, but not fellow believers.
Yeah, and I'm particularly, you actually had communication with another church here. It's a representative stand to reason weighing in with your knowledge of Mormonism and the concern there and what's going on, speaking to the leadership through emails, asking them to weigh in. And their unwillingness, I read your email. I mean, it's just a great letter. And their unwillingness to step forward there.
Well, and I want to be fair to that church as well. There is, I think, some disagreement amongst the leadership of that church. This is an issue that was just recently brought up to them. The initial reaction, though, from a number of the leaders has been, yeah, we want to preserve unity. We may not agree with the decision by this particular church, but we don't want to publicly say anything because that would hurt the unity of the body. And but my question is, what about the actions of this particular church and how that seems to be hurting the unity of the body?
I just don't understand how this hurts the unity of the body. Do we want to say that any kind of chastisement, any correction, any raising of an issue is by definition disunifying? This is a violation somehow. And by the way, if that's the case, then here's the suicide tactic works in nicely. Then none of these people can object to those who are missionaries to Mormons who are raising an issue and maybe passing out. They are passing out tracts, as I understand, outside of the property of the church. They're respecting the church's property and their desires, but they are still going to fulfill their own mission. Does this mean now that no one else, including the host church, can speak against that, because that would be disunifying? It just seems to me that people here, Brett, are straining at a gnat and swallowing a camel. Okay, well, we got a caller here who wants to weigh in. Let's talk to Steve. Steve, welcome to Stand to Reason. Hello, Steve. Is that Steve? Line one. I just pushed it. Do we have sound here? Is Steve with us? I hear somebody in the background. Hold on.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm here.
Are you Steve?
Yes. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Okay. I heard you swallowing, so I figured somebody was still alive there. But.
No, I don't think the parking lot should be used, and I think 2 John verses 9 through 11 make that principle clear.
Mm-hmm. 2 John dealing with not allowing them into your house kind of thing?
Yes. I think the principle there is not only physically inside the church building, but if the parking lot is owned by the church, then they shouldn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah, let me read that verse for people. Anyone who goes too far and does not abide in the teaching of Christ, if I'm reading the right verse here, does not have God. The one who abides in the teaching, he has both the Father and the Son. So he's making a distinction between the truth and the error right here in verse 9. Verse 10, if anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not receive him into your house and do not give him a greeting. For the one who gives them a greeting participates in this evil deed. Now, just so people understand the context, and you're probably aware of this, the house that's being spoken there was probably a house church. So this is about inviting them into the church as if you're giving approval to their doctrine and teaching. And so in this regard, I think it does apply. It doesn't say you shouldn't allow Mormon missionaries into your house. I don't think that's the point here. But certainly where the church is, the place where the truth is to be sifted through and communicated clearly and errors to be corrected, you don't want to be bringing people in that don't have the right teaching. Fair enough?
Yes, yes. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, I appreciate the call, Steve.
Thank you.
And I think that's a good point. Now you could say, well, this is just the parking lot. Well, what they're doing with the parking lot is using the church to facilitate the evangelism of a false religion. Let's go to Doug. Welcome to Stand to Reason, Doug.
Hi, Greg. How you doing?
I bet you're going to blog on this.
I probably will. But my response might surprise you. To me, what's true for me? No.
I know you better than that, though. Come on.
I think this is being winsome and attractive to allow them to use the parking lot, but it's point B that would infuriate me, and I think has you infuriated also.
Yes.
I can see why a church, you know, this is even a member of a community. By the way, I would allow a porn store to use my parking lot. I would allow an abortion clinic to use my site. I would allow Scientologists.
You would.
I absolutely would, with the intention
okay.
of witness to them.
Not unconditionally.
Not unconditionally, and okay. none of this unity garbage.
Okay, fine. Yeah, I'm with you on that.
And for the purpose that we have better ideas, and we want the dialogue, because we have the truth.
I agree. I think, let me just read some, you know, Steve Wagner at Stand to Reason.
Oh, absolutely. I love that guy.
Yeah, okay. So do we. Here's what he said. He's offering this up. He says, it would have been better for this church to say to the LDS leadership, sure, we'd love to offer you a parking space. But you should know that we'll have a number of our members planning to reach out to your visitors in various ways to engage them in conversation about the new temple and the LDS faith.
Absolutely.
We won't be mean-spirited, but we'll encourage them to think deeply about LDS beliefs about God, Jesus, truth, and salvation. You're welcome to use our parking lots for your visitors. We even have a number of members of the community who are happy to help your people park.
Right.
You know what's cool about this is, in principle, in a certain sense, and if you want to say anything about this, Brett, you're welcome to weigh in, even the LDS shouldn't object to that.
Right.
Because the LDS are fast to make the in some measure to make the distinction, maybe not as much as we'd like, to between the LDS and Presbyterians and Baptists and all the rest of them that their founder said were abominations. Now they're not going to use that language anymore because it's not PC. But they knock on our doors because they think that we're wrong, even though we're Baptists and Presbyterians. We're some of those misled Christians, and so they're going to correct us. And so making the distinctions between what you and I believe, Doug.
Right.
And what they believe, it would serve them well, it seems to me.
They rely on the kindness and generous of the average person, the actions of the average person to allow them into their home. So they should encourage dialogue and be okay with this talk.
And clarifying the distinctions and stuff like that.
Probably myself included, to decently engage them on such a subject.
Mm-hmm.
We'd probably lose more of our people by witnessing to them than they would to us.
Well, yeah, that's, isn't that?
But if you're talking about generic people who are just getting a bus ride into the temple, it'd be fascinating to put together a tract specifically designed to those people saying, we compare our ideas with them, and as you go on this tour, consider this.
Right.
Know, and here's the phone number to our church.
It's entire. Yes. It's, now, there you go. Here's the phone number to our church, you
right.
know. You know, for these folks to say, yeah, they're going to. Maybe somebody will come over and they'll receive the. I saw one of the emails. And they'll receive the gospel of Jesus Christ and be born again. Maybe one or two, if your wishful thinking works. However, the question I've asked, Doug, is how many people of 185,000 that are going to visit in the next 3 weeks are actually going to be converted? And I wouldn't be surprised if 1% were converted.
Right.
That's almost 2,000 people.
Well, there'll be a certain lack of hostility to the Mormon Church if they're going to go anyway, so they're kind of prime subjects.
Well, whatever, you're still... But the point I'm making is, look at, you've got a church here that's a Christian church entrusted by God to
right.
be a light of the gospel of Jesus Christ, not a light like friendly people who help facilitate a false gospel, who through their actions will be facilitating the planting of a mega church of brand new Mormon believers right in their community.
Well, I've been to both mega churches in Irvine. One's a lot better than the other. But there's a reason why churches get to be that size, and it's precisely because they do these kinds of things.
But you see, the point, though, is that they think they might gain a couple of converts. At the same time, they may end up contributing to thousands of converts
right.
to a false religion.
I'm not saying they're looking for numbers. I'm saying the way that they get this big is by being
by a mentality.
Squishy is how they got here. So they're only acting according to their goofed up nature.
Yeah, this is they're just acting.
Or this is more of the same.
This is in character.
It's why they're big. If you want to get big, Greg, do the same.
Oh, gosh, it's just this. Okay, Doug, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. I appreciate your call. Be looking forward to your blog. That what is Doug's blog? Maybe I'll post it here for you. Melinda will get it, and you guys can check it out. It's always fun to read Doug's blogs, and you usually can make a connection between our blog and theirs. Brett, tell me. The LDS. Oh, we got to go to break. Okay, I want to talk in just a minute about their strong efforts right now to try to minimize the differences between between what we understand as classical Christianity and this new religion that was introduced a couple hundred years ago. Greg Kokel, Stand to Reason. We'll be back after this.
Tired of defending your faith with "the Bible says so," "does too," "I think it does"? Do you remove yourself from conversations with friends and coworkers about sensitive subjects like abortion and homosexuality? Stop being unprepared and call today for the latest issue of Solid Ground, the bi-monthly newsletter of Stand to Reason. This free publication is filled with practical information and useful tools to help you articulate your faith and have a biblically grounded understanding of subjects like same-sex marriage, evolution, stem cell research, and partial birth abortion. Don't be embarrassed or unprepared when you stand up as a Christian ambassador. Simply pick up the phone and call Stand to Reason today at 1-800-2-REASON. In each issue of Solid Ground, Greg Kokel teaches you how to represent your faith as an ambassador of Christ in a concise and attractive yet effective manner. Learn tactics tempered with wisdom that make your beliefs persuasive, not naive. So contact us today at 1-800-2-REASON. That's 1-800-2-REASON. Or visit us on the web at www.str.org. Ask for the latest copy of Solid Ground to be sent to you today. It's free when you call 1-800-2-REASON.
Friends, in 2 Corinthians, Paul calls every Christian an ambassador for Christ. And that's why Stand to Reason was founded. That's why we continue. And now our commitment to helping you grow in what we call the foundations of an ambassador, knowledge, wisdom, and character, has just gotten easier. Our new ABC Studies, that's Ambassador Basic Curriculum, gives you important information on presenting and defending your faith. In these three self-directed studies, we'll cover the groundwork of how you can be an agent of change for Christ. That includes tactics in defending your faith and in-depth information on sensitive topics like abortion, homosexuality, religious pluralism, relativism, and evolution. The ABC studies are designed with busy people in mind, so you'll see maximum results in minimum time. You'll be amazed how quickly you'll be ready to take a stand as a follower of Christ. We'll even certify you as an ambassador when you're finished. Now, to find out more about the ABCs, the Ambassador Basic Curriculum, call us today, 1-800-2-REASON. That's 1-800-2-REASON, or visit on the web at str.org. Greg Kokel giving you a piece of my mind, as I do every Saturday, Sunday, 3 until 5, here with Brett Kunkel, who is our staffer, working with youth and student impact, and doing a great job. I just ran into somebody else yesterday that was talking about you coming out to their church and just said you were brilliant, so just great to have you on staff. But you tell us what you did with a group of young people here in a couple weeks ago in Utah, just to kind of bring people up to speed on that.
Yeah, well, this is the second year I worked with a particular church here in Southern California, worked with their high schoolers, and we did 8 weeks of training, gearing ourselves up for a mission trip to Utah, where our primary goal was to engage Mormons and to discuss the differences between Christianity and Mormonism and to share the true gospel of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And so we did 8 weeks of training. We 2 hours every Sunday afternoon. We tested the students. They had homework. They had tests. They were graded, and then sat through an hour and a half or so of lecture. Mm-hmm. And to get them prepared for this trip. And then we went up there and did a week worth of mission work up there in Utah.
Now, we are specifically, in terms of our values, people can go to the website and find this out. We are not a counter-cult ministry. We don't develop stuff for that. You have a different strategic purpose for this field trip.
Yes. There is probably no better way to teach high school students theology, what we believe, than to throw them in with a bunch of Mormons, uh-huh. Really. And one of the fruits we see from this trip is that students not only take an interest in what they believe, why they believe it, what the scripture teaches about the nature of God, the nature of salvation, but they're motivated to then study on their own and to do further study. And one little snapshot from the trip. I was walking past one of the rooms. This was during free time one afternoon. We gave the kids some free time. I was walking past the girls' room on the way to my room. The girls' room, I heard that some girls, four or five girls, sitting on the floor talking. And teenage girls, you'd think they'd be talking about boys or maybe fashion or
a mall or whatever.
Something
or
like.
On their phones.
Exactly. And these girls were sitting around on the floor with their Bibles out, and they were discussing theology. They were discussing the nature of God.
Mm.
I continued on towards my room. There was another meeting room that we have. Again, this is free time. These kids, they were already tired from all that we were doing every single day. This is towards the end of the trip. I walk past the meeting room, and there's a group of students, high school students, in there, vigorously flipping through their Bibles, discussing theology, discussing the nature of God, discussing the nature of salvation. This is on their own. They're motivated. They're taking the initiative to study God's word on their own, and it's exciting to
see. So basically, we want to get part of what your vision is dealing with young people through Standard Reason, through Student Impact, is to get the young people battle ready. And this is a basic training enterprise, basically.
Exactly.
It's not that we have a big enterprise to the LDS church or anything like that. It's just a place to put them. In fact, I think next year you're going to be planning to go to one to Berkeley or something like that with the kids. So, now, with this in mind, though, because of your background information that you have to get boned up on with regard to LDS, have you noticed a kind of a PR enterprise in the LDS church, the Mormons, with regards to this whole question of the role of Christianity vis-a-vis Mormonism?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, one of the most prominent theologians within the Mormon Church, Bruce McConkie, has done a lot of work, and he actually says Mormons are Christians and wants to make it an identity statement, that Mormons are identical to Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear this on the streets, I'd probably say, if I were to guess, maybe 75% of the people we talk to in Utah will make some kind of appeal of this nature, that Mormons are Christians,
mm-hmm.
or that we're just like you. We're Christians. We believe in Jesus Christ.
In fact, the LDS that I've talked to, they get upset when you say they're not Christians.
Yes.
To which I say, well, either I'm a Christian and you're not, or you're a Christian and I'm not, because it's clear we don't believe the same things. And I know this because you're knocking on my door to convince me to believe otherwise. I have a note here, and I don't have permission to share all this information, but I think I can read a paragraph or two from this this email. So I can't tell you who it's from, but it's somebody who's involved in evangelism to Mormons. And here's what he has to say. For no less than 50 years, the Mormon Church has been changing its name, hiring PR companies to present a more Christianized front. It's nothing more they would like than for people to think of them as just another Christian denomination. To this end, they have made inroads with numerous Christian denominations and other religions, all the while stating that they, the Mormon Church, are a Christian church. To see what I mean, all one needs to do is to read the information contained in it, and it has a website for ldstemples.org. All right. ldstemple.org. There you can go. It's my concern is not just for the Mormon people, he adds, but for the Bride of Christ, the Christian Church. When a Christian organization lets a group who professes to be Christian use their facilities, it confuses people. And from my understanding of this church that's in question, that's what you are about. In other words, you profess to be Christian, but your actions are confusing. We should be biblically distancing ourselves from those who preach another gospel contrary to that which we have already received. Now, this is a quotation from Galatians 1:9, at which Paul says, for those who do such a thing, and LDS is an example of that, let them be accursed, is what he says. That's like go to hell in biblical language. If the Episcopal Church across the street were to have a homosexual convention, I believe they would be flatly denied if they were asked to use that church's lot for overflow parking. Just because the Mormons appear to be clean-cut and harmless does not make it so. While I agree with and of course he means does not make it them harmless spiritually, is his point. One cannot be considered a good neighbor if he does not tell his neighbor their soul is in grave danger. And a light on a hill is no good unless it's shining. Those all appropriate comments concerning the situation. Let's go to another caller who wants to weigh in on that. What line is that for Dan? Line one? Dan?
Hey, Greg.
Welcome to Stand to Reason.
Hey, one of your guys out here in La Mirada, man.
Okay.
I just want to commend you for bringing this up. It takes a lot of courage, and you're probably going to get some flack, but you'll be prayed up.
You know what? I am not courageous enough to be silent about this or to do what these folks are doing. To be honest with you, I mean, I thank you for the nice word. I don't feel like I'm being courageous. I'm feeling like I would be courageous for me not to say anything because I'd had to stand before the Lord. You know what I'm saying?
But the way it's getting now, Greg, is ecumenism is rampant, even in. Forgive me for saying this. I had a conversation on another station on Thursday afternoon.
On this issue?
No, well, with ecumenism, not on the Mormon Church, and maybe I shouldn't bring it up because it's not about this, but it's the same. It was the same thing, and I was astounded by the ecumenism of people. This what this man was saying, and he's supposedly a believer.
Yeah.
And I mean, I this is what I do. I have. People like us have to start talking up. And it doesn't, it's not bringing about disunity. Unity is not the one thing. Paul, Peter, all of them.
Right.
Doctrine we gave you, Jude 3.
Hey, or Galatians chapter 2. Paul went face to face, toe to toe with Peter.
Yes.
And he opposed him to his face. And there are times when that's necessary. And I'm not opposing them to their face right now. I haven't even mentioned the name of the church. But what I'm trying to point out is that this is unconscionable. And how is it that a church can get to the point where they think this is an example of being a light for Christ, and how another church could say, yeah, we can't say anything against it because we want to show unity here.
Oh, yes, yes. But the thing
good now, night.
The thing that's so important about what you're saying is that this is it's not about naming names. This is something that goes from person to person, from Christian to Christian, to denomination to denomination. It's more of an ooze that is seeping into Christianity where you don't, there's no... confronting.
Yeah, and this is part of, I think that, you know, I've talked with some other of my staff members about this, and we think part of what's going on here is this background radiation of political correctness and tolerance. You know, and so it's like, well, we got to be nice to everybody and tolerate it. Tolerance in the classical sense, I'm sorry, in the postmodern sense, that means we got to kind of treat it like if it's okay, even though we know in our circles we don't agree with it. But it's better just to kind of be loving and sweet to them, and then maybe somebody will tiptoe over to our church and stick their head in. Why, for goodness sake? I guarantee you, the Mormons can out-nice us every single day of the week.
Well, I'll tell you what, we can't be you know, Peter says, "With make this in respect," but also, like Jude says in Jude 3,
contend.
Yeah, contend. But that term that he uses there, I can't remember the Greek, but it's to wrestle like the Olympians did, wrestle with each other.
Contend earnestly for the faith once and for all delivered to the saints.
And if I have to contend with even another brother like Peter, like Paul did with Peter, and I if I don't tell him that. And if he listens to me, great. Not that if he listens to the word, not me, forget me.
Yeah, but there's a lesson here. This, in my view, this isn't a Matthew 18 kind of situation. This is a public event. This is a public thing. There's a lesson here for the church. By the way, Dan, I appreciate your call. Thanks for weighing in.
Greg.
I'm just so concerned that it's communicating the wrong message and the kind of false piety that is being used to justify this light on the hill being neighborly, for goodness sake. Can you imagine Jesus saying, yeah, come on in, folks. Put those money changers right over there. We got it in the corner. And here, let me move this candelabra. Let's put your Molech statue. That'll go right here. Let's get this candelabra thing out of the way. Take that in the back, fellas. Now we got a lot more room. Any other statues? Want to bring them on here? Boy, we're all one big family, one big happy family. Oh, shucks. Isn't it great? We're neighbors. Kumbaya. Is this what WWJD, is this the kind of thing Jesus would do? Let's talk with Glenn. Glenn, welcome to Stand to Reason.
Hello, Greg.
Haven't heard from you in a while.
Well,
yes, sir. Thanks for
I would definitely be on the side of not even allowing the Mormons to use the parking lot.
Even if you passed out tracts?
Even if. I would not encourage them. I would in any way. I would have to. I would say go wherever they were parking and whatever parking lot that they did have and hand out literature there, I would say that I wonder why aren't you naming the name of the church?
There you go. Well, that's...
I think you should.
Yeah, it'll probably come out. I thank you for the call, Glenn. It'll probably come out before the show's over. But my point is to go after the idea. People can figure it out if they want to. I've pretty given enough clues, I imagine. But it's really to go after the broader idea here. But anyway, hour number two coming straight up. And we'll change gears here a little bit. Greg Kokel, Stand to Reason. If you're on the line, stay with us, and we'll pick up your calls next hour.
This is the show your pastor warned you about.
Yes, and that show is Stand to Reason. I'm Greg Kokel. Yeah, Rooster Booster's all out there. It's a show that turns your mind on. We kind of like to call it basic training for your mind at Stand to Reason. And we are standing for classical Christianity, classical Christian values. That's one of the reasons I was so upset as I started last hour talking about this church here in Southern California that's facilitating the evangelizing of Mormons. And I promised you last hour that I was going to give you Doug's blog number. It's Doug Tenapple. That would be T-E-N-N-A-P-E-L, and that last name's important because that's his URL. So it's Dubs, T-E-N-N-A-P-E-L, Tenapple, double N, Tenapple, A-P-E-L, .com. So it's www.tennapel.com. Doug's a cartoonist of significant skill, does graphic novels and works with Hollywood quite a bit, and he is apparently he's got a new project out called Cat Scratch that he's done, and some of you know what that is. I don't, but if you do, that's Doug. That's our Doug. So you can go to our blog, and we frequently link to Doug's blog as well at str.org. And you can get to Doug's that way. I want to continue just a little bit longer. We've got a couple more calls pertaining to this issue. Just so if you didn't listen in last hour, just tuning in now, let me lay out the issue. Then we got to go to Connor and to Bodie and then to the rest of your calls. I asked a question. What if you were a major church in Southern California committed to the proclamation of the gospel of Jesus Christ, and I read to you what they believed? By the way, what I read to you, it was, according to the Bible, God's word, those who believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and by grace trust him as their Lord and Savior to forgive their sins are members of the worldwide body of Christ, period. I say period because that's a good statement, but it's also the only statement under what they believe. I mean, that's good as far as it goes, but it's rather spare if you're a Christian. You go to Stand to Reason's website at SDR.org and you look at We Believe and you can see we've really worked it out. Because we don't want there to be any ambiguity about the things that are most important to believe and how they are played out. So if we believe in the sanctity, if we believe that human beings are made in the image of God, that means you can't kill them through abortion, for example. Anyway, this is very spare, and it's part of the habit of churches nowadays to kind of get by with minimalist theology. And when they get by with minimalist theology, I understand the purpose. You don't want to orient – what's the word? Not disorient, but you – put people off or confuse them or whatever. So just say, here's the basics, you know. We don't get into a lot of these things that might kind of bug people. So it's the basics. But pretty soon, you know, it's like, you know, Christianity and water, but without the Christianity part. Just water. You know, it's so basic. It's almost like, you know, the problem with the Apostles' Creed is that, and this isn't even, this is much more spare than the Apostles' Creed, but heretics could affirm the Apostles' Creed. That was why they need Nicaea. This, Mormons could certainly affirm this with their new definitions of most of the words. But in any event, that's what they believe. If you were a church like this and you had 10,000 people in your congregation here in Southern California and the LDS knocked on your door and said, can we use your parking lot so that when people come and visit our new temple, 185,000 of them over the next 3 weeks, they'll have a place to park since we don't have enough room and we'll just shuttle them back and forth. Will you help us this way? My question last hour was, what would you do? Would you participate in facilitating the massive evangelism project of the Church of Jesus Christ for Latter-day Saints so that you could be good neighbors? That's what this church did. And so we've been reacting, responding, reflecting on that decision. Let's go to Connor. Connor, welcome to Stand to Reason. You're with a can I call it a counter-cult enterprise?
Yeah.
That's kind of politically incorrect, I realize, but
I understand.
Mormonism is a cult of Christianity. It's not a Christian cult. It's a cult of Christianity.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, there's a difference in the way you say it. And you're working, you've been working with them. What's your reflection on the situation?
I was just really disturbed by the choices Mariner's made with, obviously, the whole parking situation. I know you've gone over that.
By the way, I haven't mentioned the church name, but you just did. But stick that on me. Okay.
I'm really sorry.
That's all right.
Nevertheless, we were out there. I was out there for about 8 or 9 hours yesterday.
Yesterday was the big grand opening. It's the first day for the Newport Beach Temple for LDS, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so, as I understood it, though, the church's parking lot was not going to be used until Monday for Monday through Friday, since the church wasn't using it very much during those days, and some other parking lots are going to be used on the weekend for the LDS. But mm-hmm. on the grand opening, was the lot being used, or what's the situation there?
The situation, I was at a parking lot, like a medical center, and that's where we were stationed. That's where they were stationed, the LDS church. They had a whole bunch of buses running through,
uh-huh.
and people would park there. So I was there handing out information. There was a lot of issues there, where they claim to have jurisdiction over the parking lot and threatened to arrest us.
Oh, I see. So they tried to silence your attempts to show people the distinctions between the LDS and other Christian churches.
Yeah, we're simply passing out a paper that kind of discussed some of the issues in the temple and some of the issues. Basically, I had a doctrinal comparison chart.
Okay, let me ask you a question, though, Connor. Now, I'm going to trust you to be as candid as possible.
Okay.
I don't know the group that you represent, but are you kind of an in-your-face kind of group there, or are you guys kind of kindly and low-key and just nice information? And tell me what it's like.
I would definitely say it's not an in-your-face type group. The information we pass out clearly outlines the truth. But we don't go about it in an in-your-face type way. There's no yelling. There's no raising the voices, simply.
There's no name-calling kind of thing or
nothing like that.
You're showing, in the literature itself, so there's a...
Yeah, it's
showing the differences.
The outlining biblical truth in the literature and doing it in a respectful manner without compromising the truth.
Okay, good. And so they don't like that, though, as I said earlier last hour, maybe you heard it, I don't know, I would think, since they are trying to proselytize people away from our religious convictions, which implicitly is that theirs are different, first, and secondly, that theirs are right, showing the differences shouldn't be a problem, but they still objected.
Yeah, they definitely do, because many of them claim that there are no differences. As I was trying to hand it out to people, they'd say, well, there is no difference between Mormonism and Christianity.
Then why do we need another Christian church here in Newport Beach?
Yeah.
Why are they sending out missionaries to the United States of America, which is filled with a whole bunch of Christians,
on their assessment? They forget 1 Nephi 14:10, which says that their church is the only true church, and it labels the other churches in the world Church of the Devil, the whore of all the earth.
Oh, that's a new one. I was only aware of the testimony of Joseph Smith in Palmyra, New York, where God told him that all the other churches were abominations.
Yeah, 1 Nephi 14:10 makes very clear that our church is the whore of all the earth.
Mm-hmm. So, and we're not taking offense at that. It doesn't bother us that they say that. The point is that we're not them and they're not us. I mean, that's the point.
Correct.
Being a missionary, and now they're objecting because you're drawing the distinction.
Mm-hmm. Definitely what's going on.
So they beefed. They tried to call the police. Of course, that didn't work, apparently.
Yeah, they claimed they had a document stating that they had jurisdiction over the parking lot in which we were handing out literature, but they said they'd bring the document and arrest us, but they never showed up with the document. And when
mm-hmm.
the police showed up, they said, until you have that document, these people, they have the right to freedom of speech in this area.
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay, that was LDS.
Yeah.
What about whether any from the host church in question here that also weighed in?
Well, my good friend went over to the host church to pass out information at the end of their evening service. And
was he on church property?
I don't think so. I think he was just on the sidewalk near church property.
Okay, and what was the purpose? Because these are Christians, not LDS,
yeah.
So go ahead.
The purpose was just simply offer free information on Mormonism to these Christians that were leaving the church service.
Huh.
That was because some of those people might not know a whole lot about Mormonism, and that was the intention. And apparently, my friend, he says the pastor of the church drove by and gave him a very disapproving look. And none of the Christians seemed happy at all that they were there. There were two friends of mine there, and when they came back, they told me that they weren't received kindly in any way.
Okay.
They were not protesting. They weren't aggressive in any way. They were just simply trying to hand out information.
Was it the same information that was being handed out at the other parking lots?
Correct.
Okay, so that's showing the distinction between Christianity and LDS.
Yeah, and also just kind of give him some basic facts on the temple and stuff like that.
Okay, so the guy gave him a look, but I mean, you can read a lot into a look. But nobody actually said anything. No church people discouraged them or challenged them or something. What I mean is leadership. No official people from the church.
That's another issue. I wasn't there involved as much in that issue because the leader of the ministry with which I'm working, he.
What's the name of your ministry? Could I ask?
It's called Mormonism Research Ministry. It's MRM.org.
Okay.
And that's with Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson.
Yeah, right. Bill McKeever. I met him actually for the first time about 3 months ago when I was in someplace cold, Minnesota.
Yeah, I think he told me about that.
Maybe it's like winter, yeah. Nice guy. Yeah. He's been doing this work for, 20, 30 years with LDS?
Yeah, 26 years now.
Yeah, okay. And so you're working with his organization, and he's a nice guy as far as I can tell, and good manners.
Nice. Yeah, definitely. He's one of the most non-confrontational people you'll run into in this type of ministry.
Are you concerned that the people at the church in question that's allowing the parking lot to be used do not understand what their church is really participating in, or
I think that could be an issue. Yeah, and so I think it definitely could have been helpful for some of those people to see the information that we were handing out.
Mm-hmm. See, what's interesting about something like the LDS, and again, I'm not trying to speak against individual people and be obnoxious and mean and nasty or anything. I'm talking about the religious point of view. I think people that are caught up in this are caught up in for reasons I understand, you know, nice people, they have emotional experience, whatever. I'm talking about the ideology that we are not to be taken captive to, but rather to tear down. This is an insidious, hideous ideology, and I say that because those who hold to this view will stand before God bereft of a Savior that will help them in the last judgment. To put it in more crisp terms, people who believe this are going to hell. And therefore, for Christian churches to facilitate that is to facilitate them going to hell. I don't see any other way around this. Is that a fair way of putting it?
I definitely agree, and that's why I'm concerned enough to drive up to Newport Beach for this opening and spend a week up here trying to stop them from deceiving people with the false gospel.
So now, come Monday, that church lot is going to be filled with cars, and the shuttle's going in there. Are you guys moving your operation over to the church lot or to the sidewalk outside the church lot, or how does that work?
Probably, since I don't think they're going to allow us actually on the church lot.
Right.
Probably going to be out in front. And out in front of there and out in front of the temple, mostly holding signs, advertising websites, because there's really no way for us to get close enough to the people to actually hand them literature.
Gotcha, yeah, because they're driving in, you can't obstruct, and then they're driving out, and you get run over, and that's not a pretty sight. So, there's a number of websites. What are some of the websites that you would suggest people go to for information? There's one called josephlied.com, I've heard. Is it .com or .org?
.com,
yeah. .com,
and the guy who runs that, Mike Norton, he's a extremely nice guy, and he's really a lot more non-confrontational than the title of his website sounds.
Yeah, ex-Mormon, I understand, right?
Yes.
Former Mormon, yeah. So, that's just meant to get people stirred up, because I understand he uses that Salt Lake City or whatever, but
yeah,
do you have a, what about your site?
MRM.org.
MRM for Mormon Resource Ministry?
Mormon Research, Mormonism Research Ministry.
Okay, good. MRM.org.
Org,
okay, good.
And there's also MormonInfo.org.
Okay, good.
Which is run by a friend of mine, Rob Zavolka, who's...
Oh, yeah, Rob's a Talbot guy. He's also a friend of mine, too, from the earlier days at Talbot, when I was my first 5 years at Talbot, working on my MA. Now I'm in my 12th year. He's long gone, but I run into him every once in a while. In fact, our group worked with him last year, I think. And did you guys see him? Yeah, this year, too. When we send our group up there, you know, to that battleground up in Salt Lake City, you know, for the training that we were just talking about.
Yeah.
Well, look at Connor. You keep up the good work and keep your, you know, as my dad used to say, keep your nose clean and do a respectable job in what the way you're approaching this. But I keep doing the work that you're doing. And
one more thing I wanted to mention real quick was that you said they're expecting approximately 185,000 over the next few weeks.
That's what I saw in one of the emails.
Yeah, they're really good at inflating numbers, because there was probably, we counted the first hour, probably 150 people total during the first hour.
Oh, okay.
And all day, buses were coming back with four or five people on them, so it's extremely slow.
Oh, well, that's good news.
It is good news.
That's great. No thanks to the host church. Well, actually, they're not on board yet. They will be during the week. But that's really good news. I'm glad to hear that. Because the comment that I made earlier, if you got 185,000 people there and only 1% convert, that's 1,850 people. That essentially, that's almost a megachurch right there in that community, you know. And this is a megachurch of a false Christian gospel that is being facilitated by a church who has been entrusted by Christ to bring the gospel to that community, the true gospel to that community. So listen, you're welcome to call in, Connor, next weekend.
Okay.
Kunama, you're still there? Can you bring that his volume up? Yeah. Call in and just tell me how it goes and just kind of give me an update, okay?
All right. God bless.
Thank you very much. Keep up the work. Ay. I think we're going to go to break, okay, because I'm worn out just thinking about this. We're going to go to break just a bit early, and then we're going to come back to Bodie, who has a question about what is the Christian's duty to evangelism. And, boy, this seems to me to go hand in glove with what we're talking about here. 1-800-227-5278 is my number. If you're in the 714 area code, that number 754-4150. You're listening to Stand to Reason.
Human suffering poses the most difficult question anyone can ask about a God who is both good and powerful. Do you know how to respond to the presence of evil and suffering in the world? Are you struggling with this question personally and need some clear thinking on the issue? Are you doubting God's goodness or know someone that is? Let Greg help you think through this important question. Order the tape set, Three Tough Questions, from Stand to Reason. You'll also get Greg's training on two other questions that many struggle with today, the heathen and the unknown God, and is one way the only way? You'll be equipped to answer three of the toughest questions leveled against Christianity by the time you've thoroughly gone through this material. Extensive notes are included for your study. Order today by calling 1-800-2-REASON or by visiting our website at www.str.org.
Hi, this is Hugh Hewitt. Want to make a difference for a Christianity worth thinking about? Stand to Reason can help you do just that. STR trains Christians just like you to be effective ambassadors for Jesus Christ. Stand to Reason relies on the support of listeners to continue broadcasting in your area and on the web. Your gift keeps STR providing training to you and other Christians to become effective ambassadors for Jesus Christ. You will learn how to deliver a message that is accurately informed, develop a method that is skillful, tactical, and fair, and cultivate a manner that is warm, attractive, and inviting. If you want to make a difference for Christianity worth thinking about today, both in the world and in the church, consider supporting STR Radio today. You can start supporting STR today by calling 1-800-2-REASON or send your gift to 1438 East 33rd Street, Signal Hill, California, 90755. Again, 1438 East 33rd Street, Signal Hill, California, 90755. And thank you for listening.
Stand to Reason, ladies and gentlemen, the place where you can have a shopping spree in the marketplace of ideas, and we're knocking some around today.
I hear sounds above the shuffling.
Greg Kokel here, one of the good guys, equipping you to think every Sunday 3 to 5. And if you're listening on the World Wide Web, you can call us, actually, 1-800-227-5278. But you can't call while you're listening to this because you're listening to a recording if you're listening now. And I'm not on the air now, so you're going to have to call during live hours. I'm here in Los Angeles 3 to 5, and so you just make the calculation for the time, dial up that number, and be glad to talk to you. Talking about a church here in Southern California that is allowing its a mega church, a Christian megachurch, an evangelical megachurch, who is allowing the LDS to use its parking lot to shuttle visitors to their new temple, and which, of course, this visitation, new temple, grand opening, is a big, you know, missionary enterprise for them. It's just, I mean, massive. And it's a way of them, you know, getting a footing here, in this case, Newport Beach. And what's especially frustrating is not so much, I guess, that the church is allowing this, but the church is disallowing, has no plan themselves for warning people of the false religion that will be proselytizing them as soon as they leave the host church's parking lot, but actually has forbidden other groups who are skilled at this from coming on their property and providing a warning. So we've got Bodie. Bodie, you know, you get the star for waiting the longest in the history of Stand to Reason.
Excellent.
You have been very patient, and I appreciate that.
No worries. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I just am really curious. I didn't know that you were talking about evangelism today. It works out kind of good. But I guess it simply boils down to I want to do my duty as a Christian. But a lot of times I don't know what that is, you know, because a lot of ministries that are like, you know, we need to be out sharing and witnessing, and if, you know, there's you know, 6 billion people going to hell, and, you know, you have the key, and, you know, on the other hand, you have, you know, people that are saying, well, just wait for the divine appointment, don't push it, you know what I mean? And so I'm just trying to figure out a healthy
course
of looking at, how to deal with unbelievers, how to approach them. You know, just as, you know, as obviously we're supposed to do our duty as a church, and just, you know, and you're throughout the day, what's a healthy way to look at?
Well, I'll tell you my point of view here, and I think that there is a range. The answer to your question is that there's a range of responses.
Okay.
There are some people, depending on personality, gifting, opportunity, that are going to respond, be much more aggressive than others. Some people are just gifted at this, it seems.
Right.
You know, they are just clever in this way. Bill Bright, founder of Campus Crusade for Christ, now with the Lord, he'd get on an elevator. I mean, this is a real story. He'd get on the elevator, and he would witness to people in the elevator, so by the time they're at the top floor, they were Christians. You know, I mean, this like unbelievable.
Right.
That's not me. It's not my style. It's not my personality. It's just not me. However, there on the other end, there are people who say, well, you know, I'm just going to witness with my life.
Right.
Now, this isn't Christianity.
Yeah.
I mean, it is as far as it goes. It doesn't go far enough.
Right. It's almost like based on fear.
Yes. Well,
you know what I mean? It's like, well, I don't really want to, you know, push it. You know, if someone really asks me, then I'll...
Oh, yes, I think so, too. Yeah, I think that their own fear of engagement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that that's a fair, pardon me, assessment there. And so if somebody says, my faith is a personal faith, it's a faith I keep to myself, or it's a faith that I simply live out, then my response is, well, that may be your faith, but that isn't the faith of Jesus or the apostles.
Right.
Theirs was a faith that lived and did. You know, it's walking the talk. It's talking the talk, walking the walk, to use an old cliche. So if my commitment is that, my conviction here is that as a Christian, I am God's ambassador. This is what we built our organization around. And you might just look at this passage, if you haven't recently, 2 Corinthians chapter 5.
Right.
And verse 20 is our verse, but of course that's embedded in a paragraph that talks about reconciliation. And so we are, this thing about Christians being ambassadors is built into this whole idea of the world being reconciled to God. We are His people for that purpose. We are the ones standing in between.
Right.
Quite aggressively, he says, we are ambassadors for Christ. We beg of you on behalf of God, Christ, be reconciled to God. So he's quite aggressive there with the Corinthians. Those who are apparently not Christians in their congregation. And then he he's more aggressive, but I think this ambassador motif is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
My attitude is, I'm God's ambassador. Now, that doesn't mean I open my mouth in every situation,
sure.
But it means I'm the ambassador. So if I'm not ever opening my mouth, then I'm not fulfilling my job. I'm looking for the opportunities that are most fruitful for me. And so when I go on an airplane, I'm probably like the next guy, to be honest with you, Bodie.
Right.
I want to read my woodworking magazine, play with my computer, or go to sleep. You know, I'm not a sanguine personality. It's like, oh, what do you want to talk about for the next 5 hours, you know, kind of thing. However, even though that's my personality, which is a little bit more to myself in certain ways, don't want to be bothered. At the same time, I know that I'm not just there for myself. I am here, I don't mean at Stand to Reason, but I mean here on earth.
Right.
I'm talking about myself as a Christian, not as a professional member of Stand to Reason. I am here to be Christ's ambassador. So when I'm on the airplane, I am looking for opportunity to be faithful. Okay?
Okay, sure.
I'm looking for an opportunity to, but I'm not trying to force it. I might try to make an opportunity a little bit. And people have heard me say before, it's like fishing, you know, throw out a little bait and see if you get, you know, a follow.
Right.
You may not always get a strike. If you get a strike, you didn't set the hook or, you know, whatever. They sometimes get away. But I, you know, I'm just seeing what happens. And if nothing happens, I don't push the river, you know. I just let it go because
right.
I have a strong sense of God's sovereignty. But my sense of God's sovereignty does not disqualify my own initiative.
Right, yeah. Well, I guess maybe the deeper question is like, to what degree are we responsible when it comes to the influence of, you know, people that we come across? You know, I know we're not responsible for their eternity, but clearly God does give us a chance, you know, in a position.
Well, I don't think his blood is going to be on your head if you don't witness to him. I don't think it works that way. Some people will say that, you know. If you don't talk to him, then you're going to be judged for not telling him. I don't see that in the Scripture so much.
Yeah.
Certainly in the New Testament. There might be occasions where prophets said that the blood would be on their head if they didn't speak what God told them to speak. But I think that's
the Ezekiel passage that comes from, correct?
Pardon me?
That's the Ezekiel passage. Where
yeah,
that,
it might be. But Ezekiel's a prophet. He's got a different kind of responsibility.
Sure.
I mean, by the way, if that were true, then I would be guilty for every single human being that I met that I didn't communicate the truth to.
Well, right, obviously.
And the fact is, how are you going to communicate that to everybody without being frivolous?
Right.
Jesus died for your sins. Okay, you're covered. Oh, you're going to hell if you don't believe in Jesus. Okay, you're covered. I mean, like, this is a complicated thing.
Right.
And so what's a part of our responsibility is trying to be that ambassador and make the best use of whatever opportunity the Lord gives us. Think of it that way.
Okay.
And I have told people in the past, I've written on this, I have a very modest goal. Do you know what my goal is?
Put a stone in the shoe.
There you go.
Yeah.
And you never know when the stone's going to be a big rock and turn into a five-hour conversation.
Right.
But if it's just a stone, it's a stone.
Right.
And so I shoot rather low in a certain sense. I mean, my sights are low. And then if God gives me more opportunity, I mean, I'm his man. I'm there. I'm waiting to see what happens. And if it doesn't go the direction I want, all right. Well, then it's not the divine appointment. You know, I had a friend make this observation to me many years ago. It was actually the wife of the gentleman who discipled me. His name was Craig Englert. Her name is Kathy. And Kathy said, quoting, I think, accurately here now in John 10, she said, Jesus said, my sheep hear my voice. And she said, when you're witnessing, there's a sense that when you are talking to somebody, if sometimes you can almost see or sense the sheep lift their head.
Right.
Now, she understood in the passage in John 10 that Jesus is talking about the influence of the Holy Spirit on somebody, at a non-Christian being drawn to Christ. That was the point there. My sheep hear my voice is not about believers. It's about non-believers in the context.
Okay.
And so she said she understood that sometimes you're sharing and you'll see they lift their head. Sometimes they keep eating grass. And so if they keep eating grass, you leave them alone.
Right.
If they lift their head, then you take it the next step further. And so she said she's looking for the person who's looking for her kind of thing.
Totally.
I think that's a good rule of thumb.
It comes from a desire to really just want to share more, I guess. And, you know, a lot of times when you feel like you get scared or you don't talk about it, then you're like, you know, you guess. Just
yeah, you don't want to bruise the fruit either, you know, and the one you don't want to just say something crazy, right. You know, just to get into the conversation. And so that's why we use a tactical approach. You know, you got the Columbo tactic. You know about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can use the first use of the Columbo tactic is to gather information.
Sure.
What do you mean by that's the question? So you're just talking, you know, just it. By the way, what do you mean by that can be about anything. It doesn't have to be about Christianity per se. But I'll sometimes, when I get on a plane, I'll be friendly. I'll try to be friendly. Look, if I'm crabby or I look maybe a little crabby and I'm open, then I open my Bible or another book or something. Then people think, oh, there's one of those crabby Christians. So I'm trying to be pleasant and sweet and friendly and warm and whatever. But not intrusive. And if I get in a conversation, fine. And people ask me what I do, then I can try to put it in a way that might stimulate. I'm a talk show host. Oh, really? What do you talk about?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so there's an easy way to move that way.
Sure. Right.
And then I just follow it wherever I can. And I'm trying to gear my conversation in a way that will pique their curiosity and then get into a conversation. And if not, then if they don't pick up on it, that's not my fault. I'm there.
Right.
So sometimes it turns out to be a Christian, and I find out before... I find out he's or she's a Christian before they find out that I'm a Christian.
Hmm.
Well, then I start asking them questions.
Sure, right.
And that's kind of fun, you know, because I don't show my own hand, but I went, oh, really? Well, why are you a Christian?
Mm-hmm.
What's that all about? Are you the kind of people who tell – I said this to one guy on a plane a couple months ago. Nice kid from he was part of the sports team, a manager for the national championship some team out of Santa Barbara, UC Santa Barbara. What is that thing where they lacrosse, yeah. Nice guy. And so he was reading this book, and so I was asking him about, you know, well, what's the book? You know, oh, it's about missionary work or something. I don't know. And then he breathed a sigh of relief and then said, how did I do, you know? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you know, I appreciated that he stayed in the game.
Sure.
But he needed to, he did, I'll tell you what, he did better than probably 95% of other Christians do, so I'm not going to find fault here.
No.
But anyway, so sometimes I'll do that. But if it's a non-believer, I just let, I try to be available and toss out a little bait. If they follow up, fine, then I'm in the game. If they don't, then I'm not going to force it. That's kind of my view.
Okay.
I'm available to God if he wants to do something, and I'm going to take you take whatever opportunities he gives me, but I'm not going to force it.
Excellent.
Okay, Bodie.
Excellent. Thanks, Greg.
I hope that was worth waiting for an hour and 20 minutes for.
Oh, man, always. Appreciate you guys so much. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. By the way, I just noticed our lines are so rock solid, here full. It's like a Christmas tree here, so I'm just, I had some commentary I was going to offer, but I'll save that for next week. Let's just keep moving through the calls. Gordon in Los Angeles. Greg Kokel, hi.
Mr. Kokel, I'll make it quick. I think the missing term in this debate about the Mormon temple and the unnamed church is not just the word neighborly, but reciprocity. This church should have said, fine, we'll even pay the money for extra security for the parking and increased insurance costs. And, oh, by the way, we'd also like to have a series of one debate a year in your temple between your best apologists and our best apologists.
That's a great idea. Actually, I had a...
I've been very neighborly and friendly and say, let's talk to the local media about this amicable agreement to share resources and also to have an open debate.
In a friendly fashion, you know, in a neighborly way so that we can be a light on the hill. I think that would be entirely appropriate. It's a quid pro quo. We'll help you if you help us, and then, well, look at, you guys want to evangelize this community, now's the time to tell the rest of the world how you're different and why you're better. That's fine. Doesn't bother us. You know, another question I had, Gordon, was very similar to this, although this is a clever response, and it would be worth following through on to see. It would have been worth them following through. But the question that might be better be asked is to say, okay, for the LDS who are asking us to be neighborly, would they be just as neighborly for us if we asked to use their parking lot to promote our religion over and against theirs? What would they do? I guarantee you they would not. They would not let that happen.
I'll be honest, Mr. Kokel. I'm not LDS, and I've only been to Utah a couple of times. They might actually be that neighborly. But the thing is, I don't like to use this term, but and your knowledge of Scripture probably exceeds mine, but isn't there something to the disciples about being wise as serpents?
Yes, Jesus said that, wise as serpents, gentle as doves. And so I'm not sure how that plays out.
What I'm saying is, you know, don't let yourself be ruled by someone. Drive a fair and honest bargain.
Yeah, what you suggested, I think, was a fair and honest bargain. My comment was more to the host church, the Christian church, who was participating and facilitating this with the Mormon temple, to say, since they think they're doing this, this is the obligation of neighborliness. I said, let's see if that is an obligation of being a good neighbor. Would the LDS reciprocate? And you think maybe they would, but listen, here's why I know they wouldn't. Because even when it was some bank's parking lot and Christians were trying to make the distinction between LDS and Christian churches in literature, they tried to have the Christians arrested. So I guarantee you they're not going to let their own parking lot be used to promote a point of view contrary to theirs.
Thank you for the clarification. I'll let you go with the next callers.
Okay, Gordon, I appreciate talking to you. It was a good call, and it was a great idea, too. Let's go to Jim. Jim, welcome to Stand to Reason.
Oh, thanks so much, Greg.
You're welcome.
Always a great program, and I think I've listened to you since you were working on your bachelor's degree or so. I don't know if you were on then, but...
No, that was back 30 years ago.
Okay, and maybe it was a master's then. It's been a long time.
Yeah, I've been working on my master's, second master's here for 12 years. But wow. I've been on the air 15 years. So my first master's, I was working here too. So
that
anyway, Jim, it's nice to have you on board.
Thanks so much. I just wanted to bring this up quickly, and that is, what if this was an Islamic mosque that wanted to share the parking lot?
You know what? I've thought of that question.
Okay.
And here is what troubles me tremendously. I am not confident, given the response to the LDS, that this very same church wouldn't do the same thing with a mosque with the same rationale.
Right.
I mean, and that now, I don't think if it was a coven, in other words, a bunch of witches.
Yeah.
Or if it was an adult bookstore, or if it was Scientology,
right?
Then I am, or an abortion clinic. You know, I have more confidence that they would say no. But then my question is, as I raised before, why wouldn't you do it for them, but you would do it for LDS? Are you suggesting that a homosexual group or a adult bookstore or a witch's coven is any more dangerous than a false characterization of Christianity in which all the same language is used that we have with totally different definitions? I mean,
that's a very good point.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, Dre, I'm kind of a believer in private rights. In other words, if you own property or something, you have the right to determine who uses it.
Well, I agree with that. To me, this isn't a question of what is legal.
Right.
It's what's appropriate for followers of Christ.
Exactly. That, to me, is a dichotomy. That splits it.
Yeah, and if Jim, I thank you for your call.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, and that's it. It's not legal rights or anything like that, ladies and gentlemen. It's like we are followers of Jesus Christ, and what is our obligation here? Sure, we always want to be neighborly, all things being equal. But all things aren't equal here, is the point. And as for the comment that we want to be a light on the hill, for goodness sake, this is what the host church said is part of their rationale for allowing this to go. Your light, as one writer put it, has to shine in order for you to be a light on the hill. What light is shining now? Friendliness? Gee, we're really friendly with you guys. Sure. And again, back to what would Jesus do? Jesus was that friendly. He made room for more money changers. By the way, you know the deal about the money changers? The deal about the money changers, people think, oh, people are selling things in the church. That ticked Jesus off. Capitalism. No, you don't get it. They're money changers. You know what a money – it isn't like that they were – money's passing back and forth. It's they were changing money. Do you ever go to an airport and see a cambio change? So you change money. You change currencies. So you got a temple, and you got people coming from other countries who come to the temple who want to do commerce there, like buy a pigeon, right, so they can sacrifice the pigeon and do their religious thing. But they're coming with foreign currency, so they have to put in the currency of the host country so they can buy the things they need for their religious observance, right? So you have to change money. What was happening is that the Jews in charge of this were changing, they were extorting money from people who had to change there in order to do the things they had to do to be good religious people. And this was happening in the court of the Gentiles. So that when Gentiles came as God-fearers to participate at the level they could in the true religion of Judaism, they were getting ripped off. That ticked Jesus off. That's what was going on there. It had to do with the nature of the witness. All right? That's what we're talking about here, the nature of the witness. And I don't mean being nice. Like I said, it's great to be nice, all things being equal. But here, being nice entails encouraging the promotion of a false doctrine and false Christianity. There we have no obligation to do that. No obligation for nicety, nor would Jesus participate in this either. What would Jesus do? He wouldn't let him park. Or if he did, he'd give him a good dose of the truth while they were there. He'd see it as, and Paul too, as an opportunity to communicate the truth. Yeah, bring them all in. All the Mormon seekers, fine, come on down, but we're going to give you a dose of the truth to match up your dose of the lie that you're about to get. Greg Kokel, Stand to Reason, back in just a moment.
Tired of defending your faith with, the Bible says so, does too, I think it does. Do you remove yourself from conversations with friends and coworkers about sensitive subjects like abortion and homosexuality? Stop being unprepared and call today for the latest issue of Solid Ground, the bi-monthly newsletter of Stand to Reason. This free publication is filled with practical information and useful tools to help you articulate your faith and have a biblically grounded understanding of subjects like same-sex marriage, evolution, stem cell research, and partial birth abortion. Don't be embarrassed or unprepared when you stand up as a Christian ambassador. Simply pick up the phone and call Stand to Reason today at 1-800-2-REASON. In each issue of Solid Ground, Greg Kogel teaches you how to represent your faith as an ambassador of Christ in a concise and attractive yet effective manner. Learn tactics tempered with wisdom that make your beliefs persuasive, not naive. So contact us today at 1-800-2-REASON. That's 1-800-2-REASON. Or visit us on the web at www.str.org. Ask for the latest copy of Solid Ground to be sent to you today. It's free when you call 1-800-2-REASON.
Friends, in 2 Corinthians, Paul calls every Christian an ambassador for Christ. And that's why Stand to Reason was founded. That's why we continue. And now our commitment to helping you grow in what we call the foundations of an ambassador, knowledge, wisdom, and character, has just gotten easier. Our new ABC Studies, that's Ambassador Basic Curriculum, gives you important information on presenting and defending your faith. In these three self-directed studies, we'll cover the groundwork of how you can be an agent of change for Christ. That includes tactics in defending your faith and in-depth information on sensitive topics like abortion, homosexuality, religious pluralism, relativism, and evolution. The ABC studies are designed with busy people in mind, so you'll see maximum results in minimum time. You'll be amazed how quickly you'll be ready to take a stand as a follower of Christ. We'll even certify you as an ambassador when you're finished. Now, to find out more about the ABCs, the Ambassador Basic Curriculum, call us today, 1-800-2-REASON. That's 1-800-2-REASON, or visit on the web at str.org. I absolutely love this song. The problem is I'll be singing it for the next week. Don't mean to be cruel. That thing you do, and you remember that movie they did? What was really neat about this is I'm a guy from the 50s and the 60s, so, like, I was 13 when the Beatles hit the scene. This is a Beatles kind of song. I mean, somebody got into the head of John Lennon and Paul McCartney, in their 60s stuff, their early stuff, enough to really kind of embody the tune, and then wrote this. And it just, of course, this is a period piece, this movie. If you want to see a fun movie, this is a fun one to see. And anyway, that's that. Let's see. Announcements, okay. Next Saturday, July 30th, St. John's Presbyterian Church in West Los Angeles. I'll be there at 9 in the morning. That's a Saturday morning, and I'll be teaching on two talks, Taking Jesus Seriously and the Church in the 21st Century. If you want to contact them to find the details, it's the 310 area code 477-2513. 477-2513. And, of course, all the information is on our website, too. You can go to our str.org and punch my face there in the corner, and you'll get all the goodies. So the next day, Sunday, July 31st, I'll be at Living Oaks Community Church in Newbury Park. That's like west on the 101, or as they call it, north sometime too. But anyway, you're westbound past Westlake, past Thousand Oaks, and then to Newbury Park. And I'll be there for the 8:45 and 10:30 service. Pastor Doug Posey is having me sit in his podium for his new church, so I'm thrilled to do that. I'll be talking about No Pixie Dust. Living Oaks Community Church, July 31st, 10:45 and 10:30. Here's the number there, 805-230-0055. That's 230-0055 in the 805 area code. Just a note, we've been talking about the same topic almost the entire time, the church here in Southern California that is allowing the LDS to have thousands upon thousands of people park in their lot, the church's lot, so they can visit the new temple and be proselytized by the Mormons. I want you to know something. This isn't about Mormonism. I mean, we've been talking. I've had Brett on here with me from Student Impact at Stand to Reason, and we've been tapping him out for information, more detail about the Mormon Church. But it's not about Mormonism. It isn't like I'm attacking Mormonism here. I mean, we just need to understand, if we're Christians, that this is a false religion masquerading as Christianity. And given that as a fact, and it is a fact, then what is our responsibility as Christians? And that is, you don't facilitate that. Or if you're going to party with it, you or partner with it, then you make sure that you have opportunity now to communicate the truth. So you make use of it. You leverage it for your purposes. But you don't just facilitate it to be a nice guy. And it certainly isn't an example of being a light on a hill. So this isn't about Mormonism. It's about Christianity. It's about Christians. At Stand to Reason, we train Christians. That's my concern. I want you to see this. I want you to be able to do what's right and know what's right in circumstances like this. Do not be taken captive by philosophy and empty deception according to the traditions of men instead of according to Christ, Colossians 2:8. We are casting down, tearing down speculations, theories, lofty ideas, and other things raised up against the knowledge of God. My Amplified version, the Greg Kokel Amplified version of 2 Corinthians 10, 3 and 4. This is our responsibility, ladies and gentlemen. We are not to, in a postmodern, politically correct, tolerant kind of way, just sit back and say, sure, come on down. We'll do whatever we can to help you. You're our neighbors. We just, aw shucks, want to be nice folk. No. We can be nice folk. But we don't have to participate in that. And Steve, you're on. Thanks for waiting.
Yeah, Greg, am I on right now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Hey, you had the other gentleman on to explain what some of the new world views are that are brought in by the Mormon doctrine.
Yeah, as a contrast to the Christianity they claim to be.
Yeah.
If they claim to be Christians, well, then we have to look at what does Christianity teach and what does Mormonism teach, and do they fit, and they're not.
Sure. Now you also used an example of a caller a couple of times ago where they were saying, what if it was a mosque for promoting Islam?
Yes.
Now, Islam in these modern days with all the bombings claims that there's a kernel of Islam that's peace and loving and so forth. Could you tell us how, if we were to read the book of Quran, which I have not, and maybe we need J.P. Moreland or somebody else on but that knows a lot about it, but you probably do, how would the Quran inform our worldview? And what would we be missing if we had not read it? Because with Christianity and the Bible, I learned from Jesus about, that I'm supposed to love my God with all my heart,
right,
and soul, and my neighbor as myself. And even that goes beyond just my worldly deeds, but even into my brain, like on the Sermon on the Mount, not to lust after women. I've already committed
to right.
my heart.
Well, let me make a distinction.
What is Islam?
Okay, let me. I'll give a more general response, but because I'm not an expert in this area, and William Lane Craig would be the one that could speak more clearly about this, and he in fact has been at forums for Stand to Reason where he's talked about whether the God of Muhammad is the God of Jesus Christ. And the answer is, after a careful comparison, absolutely not. They're totally different. But you're asking a little different kind of question. You're asking more of a practical religious living question, if I understand it correctly, and not so much
yeah.
a theological question. And so could it be the case? Are there things in the Quran that instruct one about gracious living and community with other people, kindness and stuff like that, just like Jesus taught some of those things, for example, in the Sermon on the Mount? And from what I can understand, from what other Muslims say, and I have not studied the Quran, the answer to that is probably yes. But the important distinction I want to make here is that that Jesus did not come to give us teachings on how to live. That wasn't his purpose. Maybe Muhammad did to some degree, but both came to give us a description about the way the world was, and each had their unique role in it. Jesus came not to tell us to love one another, but to come to seek and to save that which was lost, to give his life as a ransom for many. He came to die on the cross so that because of that sacrificial death, the world could be rescued and made right with God. Okay, that's
how does that compare with what Islam has to say?
Well, Islam has a different solution to the problem. Basically, you've got to have an understanding of what the problem is to know what the right solution is. You've got to have the right understanding to get the right solution. Jesus gave one solution. Muhammad gives another. In fact, what Muhammad says is very, very different from what Jesus offers. And there may be some similarities, like in Jesus' teaching, you can hear things about God, the one God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You hear things about judgment and about mercy and about forgiveness. They're just offered on entirely different terms. In according to Jesus, mercy is offered because of him, what he did personally, and to be more theologically precise, God came down into a human form in the person of Jesus to accomplish a rescue operation, in the case in which Jesus then died on a cross so that anyone who had put their confidence in what he did on their behalf would be forgiven by the Father and have an advocate of the Father in Christ Jesus and would not be judged for their own sins. That isn't the system that Islam offers. Islam offers a system of submission to the one God, Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet. There is no sacrificial atonement. There is no God-man. That's a serious sin for anybody to claim such a thing. There is, in the Jesus in Islam, Jesus didn't, because Muhammad talked about Jesus, Jesus did not die on the cross and he didn't raise from the dead and he certainly wasn't an atonement for anybody else's sins. So one is just at the, one has an obligation to submit to Allah and is at the mercies of Allah for his forgiveness. And so it's a very, very different system.
And this mercy of Allah is just capricious? He saves who he wants?
From what I understand, it is rather capricious. He saves who he wants. There's no security there.
Assurance of salvation.
And from what I understand, the only assurance of salvation is if you blow yourself up in participation. You die in a holy war, which would include terrorists blowing themselves up. That's the assurance of salvation. Now, I could be mistaken. I don't want to speak out of turn here because I'm already out of my depth a little bit with Islam.
Okay, thank you.
But it's just to make the point, and I appreciate your call, Steve, and I'm glad I got a chance to clarify at least somewhat. The key here for my purposes, maybe not for Steve's, is to make the point that you can look at all religions and find teachings that are helpful to bettering your life. And if you think those teachings, that religions are just about platitudes about being nice to other people, well, then you could choose between a lot of them, and there's a lot of similarities. If you take religion, though, as what I think it is, it's intended to be, that is a worldview, and a worldview is a bundle of ideas that basically represents a map of the world, of reality. And if the worldview is an accurate map, that means it fits the way the world really is, and so they're competing maps. Say, different religions have different descriptions of reality. Jesus offered a different a description of reality overall than Muhammad did, or Krishna, or Buddha, or, whatever. These are different religious understandings. And even though there might be some similarities, that misses the point. It's not the similarities, it's the differences that matter. So that's the key thing. They give totally different pictures of the world, which include totally different assessments, in many cases totally different assessments of the problem, and certainly a different assessment in the solution. All right, let's quickly go to Matt here. We've got 2 minutes, Matt.
Hi, Greg. What do you think Jesus was doing between the ages of 13 and 30? Because the Bible doesn't say anything about those years, and there's a lot of evidence that Jesus traveled to India at this time.
Yeah, actually, it does say something very directly about that, and I have been privy to the evidence, the alleged evidence of him traveling to India. I've actually written a piece about this, and if you go to our website and put, India or Jesus in India, I have a whole analysis of that.
Can you quote me something from the Bible that says what he was doing?
Yeah, I can. Let me just see here. Luke chapter...
I'll give you some help. Second chapter of Luke. At the very end, it says...
Jesus kept increasing in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men. Okay.
And that's it. And
then it says...
Age 30. There's nothing else.
No, wait. There's more. There's more.
I've researched it. That's the only quote. Can you give me another one?
I can give you another one if you give me a moment.
Sure.
when in the next chapter, chapter 4 of Luke, and in Matthew chapter 4, there are parallel accounts. He speaks at his there in Nazareth at the synagogue, and then
he was 12.
That's correct. I'm not finished.
Nothing between the ages of 13 and 30.
Matt, let me finish. You can't respond to my argument until you hear my argument. Is that fair?
Sure.
Okay, you're anticipating what I'm going to say. There's a whole raft of arguments against this point of view, but I'm just going to offer you some of the statements from the Scripture that indicate that Jesus was in Israel the entire time. The passage that you offered me, thank you for helping me with that citation, is part of it. But then we also have Jesus there, and he's not 12, he's 30. So, you know, I got to do this real quickly. He's 30, and what he does is he goes and he preaches. And when he preaches, people say, where did he get this wisdom? Now, if he'd been gone for 30 to 15 years, they say, I know where he got it. He got it from India. But they don't say that. They say, isn't this Joseph's son? Isn't this Mary's son? Don't we know his sisters and brothers? He's the kid down the street that grew up with everybody else, and all of a sudden he's a big smarty pants. That's evidence also scripturally that he wasn't gone, but in fact he grew up there. I had more for you, but I don't have the time for it. I appreciate the call, Matt. Jesus wasn't a guru. Jesus was a Jewish rabbi. Can't make that fit. That's it, friends. See you next week. More clear thinking Christianity for you then. In the meantime, you go out and give them heaven. Okay? Bye-bye.